Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Do you ever meet someone who seems kind of off? When someone isn't being fully honest with you about their past, you should turn to Truthfinder. Whether it's a creepy neighbor or a random phone number, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by phone number, address, name, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you plan to meet from online dating apps. If you're on a dating app, you need to be on Truthfinder. Go to truthfinder.com to uncover the truth today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, April 9th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The Masters Tournament begins at Augusta National in Georgia tomorrow. It's a major benchmark in the golf season. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, U.S. trade policy continues to be top of mind in discussions about the economy. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com based in Charlotte. Andrew, thank you for joining us today. And when it comes to tariffs, we're talking about maybe the first or second moves on the chessboard right now. The United States, some of those tariffs announced last week have gone into effect, and some countries and some trading blocks have announced retaliatory tariffs. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the markets are trying to find some footing here with some competing messages coming out of the White House. The first kind of crack in the armor of these was Elon Musk going after Peter Navarro yesterday, saying some disparaging words about him and really talking about how the trade policy is just not helpful. You also have people like Jamie Dimon, the head of JP Morgan, saying, you know, this is going to cause a recession. You've had a lot of other economists come out, whether it's Goldman Sachs or Moody's, raising their recession risks up to over 60%. So we'll see what happens from here. You know, the 10% went into effect. That's the universal tariff. Now the reciprocal tariffs are going into effect. And we'll see if we can get deals done. This has just been a mess of a rollout of trade policy and truly breaking up what has taken us 80 years to put in place, that the United States led that process. So it's no surprise that the S&P 500, you know, from peak to trough was down 20% as this uncertainty has flowed through.
The idea that the United States can just reach separate trade deals with every nation on earth reminds me in some ways of Brexit, this belief that the United Kingdom could just simply reach trade deals with all of its former trading partners. Even just starting negotiations is a time-consuming process.
Yes, exactly. And all of that takes time. So there's a time disconnect between when you put tariffs on, when you negotiate deals, and then potentially when you get something good like a tax bill out of Congress, and also on reducing regulation. So there's a disconnect there. You can have the worst medicine right away, and then maybe, you know, you can get some trade deal done. So I think that's a good analogy, Brexit. The United States is a much different place than the UK was, but clearly it's just super disruptive. And again, there's something else out there. The Commerce Department is looking at putting on, million-dollar fees onto Chinese-flagged ships coming into the U.S. ports. If they do that, then that's just another layer of chaos adding to the uncertainty. for businesses. If you talk to anybody in the supply chain world, they're saying they're seeing a severe drop off in orders starting really next month. So this is going to come to head pretty quickly on the economic data that we're going to get.
And then very quickly, Andy, let me try another analogy out on you, and that is the nuclear war analogy. Let's say you're talking about hostilities between two nations, and they've reached DEFCON 2, and the hope is that somebody gets on the hotline and that cooler heads prevail. Is that a possibility here?
Yes, there's always the chance that you can create lots of separate deals with lots of different countries. The big problem, taking a step back from all this, is that there's concern that anybody investing in the United States can't trust us anymore, and the rule of law gets kind of thrown out the window. That's the biggest problem for the United States going forward after this rounds of tariffs being put on countries.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com based in Charlotte. Thank you for joining us today.
WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Masters opens at Augusta National in Georgia tomorrow. It's an event that extends well beyond the action on the iconic golf course. We welcome in Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Viterra Group in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And I saw on social media yesterday, and this is the reason why I'm here, by the way. I saw that they're having a hard time finding room for all the private jets at the airport near Augusta National. So unfortunately, Tim, I couldn't find room for my Gulfstream, and so I'm here working today and talking about the Masters with you, which is still a massive television event.
It is absolutely a big, probably the biggest and most anticipated golf event, frankly, of the year. And with good reason, right? Because it is probably the most lushly and most visually appealing match of the season. It is also historically sort of the unofficial beginning of the professional golf season, although we can argue about the PGA Tour and the LIV Golf and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is that the history, the tradition, and the sheer just lush photography and memories of a tournament is just it is legendary, not only amongst golf aficionados and those that can afford to go on their Gulfstreams to the event, but also it is something that even the average sports fan can understand, because they know things like the green jacket and just the beautiful shrubs and flowers and trees. And it is it's probably it stands alone in not only in golf but also all of sports.
And we have come a long way from Pat Summerall and Love's Theme by the Love Unlimited Orchestra setting up the Masters. This is now an interactive and immersive event. It's a social media event. It is a merchandising event.
It is probably legendarily known as the biggest seller of goods and wares related to it. The folks at Augusta have jealously strongly held onto their rights, and they are very almost dictatorial in the way that the matches and the presentation is delivered on television. This also extends to the merchandise that's available, the limitations of such, and frankly, even how they've chosen to innovate with their broadcast partners. So the very cool thing about the Masters is, somewhat strangely to their tradition, they've actually kind of leaned forward quite a bit, perhaps even more so than other golf events, into things like interactivity, the ability to see via their partners at ESPN or CBS online or via mobile devices with interactivity, actual specific holes. Where you can literally just watch one hole if you'd like, or actually also even following particular golfers instead of just relying on sort of the mainstream sit back and enjoy the broader event. So you have to hand it to the folks at Augusta National, because they have preserved this legend. They have enriched it for themselves as well as the golfers, and the tradition continues to be a standout amongst not only golf, but all of sports.
Going back, and this is just the old eye test on my part, Tim, but I'm thinking back to the late 90s and the rise of Tiger Woods, and it really must have been a game changer, no pun intended, not only just for professional golf, but for the Masters itself and how people watched it and how accessible that tournament became.
I think Tiger Woods took it to another level. It's his once in a generation, perhaps even lifetime, standout as a professional golf player, and that legacy continues. But I think the fusion of him as such a superior player and iconic figure, and this tournament, which is arguably the expression of such from an event perspective, you had a magic mashup there for a number of years that I don't think will ever be forgotten, and frankly, just fused the legacies of both.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertera Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today to talk about the Masters and its media impact. Coming up next, a study of DuSable Lakeshore Drive could result in the use of speed cameras. We'll talk about that next.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Illinois Senate is considering a bill to study the potential use of artificial intelligence-driven speed cameras on DuSable Lakeshore Drive. We're joined by Monica Eng, reporter for Axios in Chicago. Monica, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And if you went up to a random driver in Chicago and asked them, pop quiz, what's the speed limit on DuSable Lakeshore Drive? Do you think they would give you an accurate answer?
I looked it up myself when I was writing my story about this.
Yeah, it's 40 miles an hour, and I think if anybody who's been on the drive at any point in their driving life, they probably know that 40 miles an hour is drivers treat it like a suggestion more so than the law. But it seems like there is some legislation afoot in Springfield that would, at the very least, put some teeth into enforcing the speed limit there with some AI-powered cameras.
Yeah, so the suggestion, you know, a lot of people got really hopped up because the original bill was to actually place the cameras on this. Now, the amended bill is to have a study looking at it. You know, some previous studies showed that 95% of all people on especially South Lakeshore Drive did not follow the speed limit of 40 miles an hour going north and 45 going south. So Senator Sarah Feigenholz, who her district in Chicago goes from Montrose to the Hancock along Lakeshore Drive, she is proposing that, you know, we have these sort of randomized speed cameras using AI technology that work differently from those that you see and you know, okay, I'm coming up on this one, better slow down and then I'll speed up again. They may be on, they may be off, you're not sure where they are. They can follow a car and a driver for a period of time rather than just doing a snapshot. And they have proven very effective, she says, in Europe already.
And Sarah Feigenholz, the state senator, said she really embraced this after seeing pictures and video of accident scenes along DuSable Lakeshore Drive. I mean, I think when you hear on a traffic report, we have a crash on the drive somewhere, you don't really register the human toll of that particular accident. But she said, looking at some of the accident pictures, it was like watching a horror movie.
Yeah, and she shared some of those videos and photos from her constituents, and they were eye-popping. I've included a couple of them in my story today, and it does kind of bring out the human toll of all these accidents and fatalities. And what a study by Feigenholz's office found was that 61% of all the deaths, traffic fatalities, that happened in her ward happened on Lakeshore Drive.
And the one thing I notice, Monica, as a driver on DuSable Lakeshore Drive every now and then, is how difficult it can be to enforce that 40 and 45 mile per hour speed limit, because unlike the expressway, you don't have shoulders in many places where you can be pulled over for speeding. And on top of that, Chicago police are strictly in charge of enforcing the speed limit on DuSable Lakeshore Drive, and police officers have many other duties outside of traffic enforcement.
They sure do. You know, CPD says that it's is overextended as it is. And, you know, I am a rule follower, so I usually follow the under at least 46, and I get scolded by my husband and my mother for doing so, but nobody else is following it. And maybe that's because, like, hardly anybody knows anyone who's been popped on North Lakeshore Drive, because you just don't see cops, you know, in medians or on shoulders. As you said, there really aren't a lot of shoulders for them to be perching themselves on.
Monica Eng, reporter Axios in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, weighing the pros and cons of having a parent stay home to raise the kids.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A large chunk of federal funding to Northwestern University being placed on hold. China retaliates after the latest round of tariffs is imposed by President Trump. It's Personal Finance Wednesday, making the difficult decision of whether to have a parent leave the workforce to stay home with the kids. And United Airlines getting more gates at O'Hare. WBBM Business. The markets are higher. The Dow is up 5%, or nearly 1,900 points. The NASDAQ is up 7%, or over 1,000 points right now. The S&P 500 up 5.5, or 276 points. The mark right now in Chicago, we have 40 degrees at O'Hare with light sleet, going up to 44 this afternoon. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. The Trump administration has paused $790 million in funding to Northwestern University. That word comes as federal investigators look into the treatment of Jewish students on the school's campus. The pause mostly involves grants and contracts with the Departments of Agriculture, Defense, Education, and Health and Human Services, more than $1 billion in funding for Cornell University, also reportedly being withheld. America's tariff war with one of its top trading partners is escalating. The latest now from CBS's Jared Hill.
And no progress with a defiant China. Instead, a 104% tariff after Beijing refused to drop its 34% tariff on U.S. goods, likely meaning more expensive electronics and clothing. Imported produce largely spared, most coming from Canada and Mexico, which have been exempted. But food industry experts warn some prices may rise quickly for some perishable staples like bananas.
And just in, President Trump is pausing tariffs for 90 days on all countries other than China. And that is the reason why the markets are now up at least 5% across the board. And joining us to discuss today's market activity on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Victoria Fernandez, Chief Market Strategist, Crossmark Global Investments in Houston. Victoria, thank you for joining us today. And I love days like today because we get to throw out the playbook and talk about breaking news as it happens right now on the program. That is the announcement from the White House that that most of the tariffs will be paused for 90 days. That means we could potentially see a resolution or do this dance once again come Tuesday, July 8th.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, this morning I was just having a conversation with our CEO, Bob Dahl, and I said, look, it only takes one headline and we'll see this market up 2,000 points. Little did I know, you know, 4 hours later, we were going to be seeing that exact thing come through. And I think what today's move is showing us is that this is just an extremely volatile market that, you know, the market can move up or down based on any headline that comes through. And so we will probably have an exaggerated time of volatility, meaning investors need to take a little bit of a step back and look at it from a broader view.
And just to give you an indication of just how, you know, tightly coiled this market has been, it seems like it moves pretty quickly in one direction or the other, as you point out, merely on the headline, or as we saw earlier in the week, headlines that may not necessarily be true. So describe a market that reacts in such a profound way to small pieces of news.
Yeah, it's a market that has a tremendous amount of uncertainty associated with it. And so the last thing that you want to be doing as an investor is trying to chase these types of markets, these highly uncertain markets. You want to just look at longer term opportunities where you think the market might be going forward and do little trades, you know, trim some names here, maybe add a little bit here on names that have been that have pulled back over the last 4 or 5 trading days. You just don't want to be making huge moves in the market because, as we can see today, it can switch on you pretty quickly.
And one thing that's also interesting to watch, too, is the VIX, the volatility gauge, which was bouncing around near 50 even after that announcement came from the president on his Truth Social. But even now, the VIX is going down in a big way, down nearly 9%, well, now just bounce back up again. So even with the VIX, the VIX is volatile, and that tells me, and it probably tells you too, that maybe investors aren't necessarily buying this, and they're still on edge.
Absolutely. I don't think you want to buy off of a particular headline. As you mentioned before, we had a false headline come out that really had the markets move higher a few days ago, and then it turned out not to be true, and we reversed that. But we're seeing not only the VIX that shows the volatility in the equity market, we're seeing the MOVE index, which shows the volatility in the fixed income market. Tremendous moves in yields today on fixed income as well, with there being some concern that perhaps people have margin calls or they're selling treasuries in order to get a little bit of cash to move around in different markets. So lots of moving parts right now, and investors need to be careful.
And then going back to that old bugaboo uncertainty, and that is even with a 90-day pause, I mean, chances are we'll do this whole thing again late June, early July. And if you're a business trying to plot investment or at least plot your course for the rest of the year, how do you exist in this environment?
I'm not sure you're making long-term plans right now if you are running a business. And I think what will be quite interesting, Rob, is to see, you know, we have earnings season really starting in earnest on Friday. We've already heard today some companies pull their guidance. And I think we will continue to see CEOs and CFOs say they're just not putting those plans in place. We've seen some of the large tech companies pull those plans for CapEx that they had talked about previously. So probably a lot of companies on hold for the foreseeable future.
Victoria Fernandez, Chief Market Strategist, Crossmark Global Investments in Houston. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, examining the value of having a parent put their career on hold to stay home and raise children. We'll talk about that next.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. To work or stay home? That's a question for a couple with young children. Let's discuss some of the most important factors with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And let me just begin by saying this could easily be the most emotional discussion that you are going to hear on the program this week, or maybe even today, just because everybody has an opinion on this. Everybody has their own experience. And I just want to say from the outset, this is a judgment-free zone. Whatever works for you, Sherry. And that arrangement can take many sizes and shapes.
Yeah, I love how you say that, judgment-free zone, because, you know, a lot of times one of the spouses often feel judged if they decide to stay home or they decide to work. It can go on either side. But the most important thing, like you said, this is a very emotional decision, and you really need to communicate with your spouse or partner just to make sure that you're both on the same page. And it really comes down to your values and really to take a step back and what's important for you as an individual and what's best for your family. And you need to look at both the time, the emotion, and the money to help make that decision.
And when it comes to the money side of the equation, I'm sure you have heard this. I know I have heard this from people who say, I am working and all I do is pay for daycare. And they feel that maybe it's just not worth it. Or you have people who say, I am working and I just pay for daycare, but they find fulfillment in their job. Or they just like the idea that even if they are still working and paying for daycare, they're socking away for retirement.
Exactly. And that's really, you know, I'm a financial person, so I can't really just discuss things going forward until you really look at the finances. So, you know, look at your budget and kind of do it both ways. Look at it as if there's one income, and what would you be willing to reduce in the budget with one income? And look at it with both incomes, but make sure you include all those expenses for daycare, maybe special camps, after school care. All those things need to be factored in. And remember to look at your income after taxes. So once you look at the finances of it, and there may be a clear distinction, but if they're pretty similar, then it really goes to the other points that we mentioned. It's the emotion, and how do you want to spend your day? And what's right for your friend may not be right for you. So you need to do a lot of soul searching, a lot of values exercises, a lot of communication. And any decision you make is not final. So if you decide to work and things aren't working, then maybe you pull back and things in life change. You may have a sick child. You may have a child that needs more time. You may have a parent that needs more of your time. So, you know, you have to almost reevaluate this every year, looking from a financial, emotional, and values point of view.
One of the very nice things, though, about working in 2024 is that it's no longer an either-or proposition. You could certainly negotiate working from home some or all of the time, and continue working even if you make less. You can still bring in a paycheck, and you can still be contributing to a 401k even if you're working from home, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 days out of the week.
Boy, you just read my mind. I was about to say the same thing, that really there's some, you know, it's so different than it was 20 years ago. There's a lot of flex schedules, a lot of hybrid schedules. So again, what works best for you is something to look into. And I often, you know, I've been mentoring women and I talk with women a lot, and there are a lot of women that for a period of time, maybe they have twins or their kids need them, or it's just the right thing for their family. They do take 5, 10, 15 years off, but you're still having skills. Maybe, you know, you're the president of the PTA at the school, or you volunteer at your church. All those are still skills that you're keeping within, you know, I call, quote, your resume. So when it comes time to look for a job, don't discount those skills that you had while you maybe were staying at home. And I've hired actually two people at my business that were out of the workforce for a while, and they came back and they've been great employees. So employers, if you are listening, you know, give people a chance, because there's a lot of skills. Maybe they weren't in the corporate world, but there's a lot of skills they may have done while staying at home.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, Chicago's hometown airline is expanding its space at O'Hare.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago-based United Airlines is set to get more gates at O'Hare. Let's get the update from Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And the civilian airline passenger doesn't know, perhaps when they're on that moving sidewalk at Terminal 1 with the neon sculpture on the ceiling, that there is a great deal of intrigue and behind-the-scenes maneuvering over just how many gates airlines can have at O'Hare, and some big maneuvering between United and American, big rivals there.
No, that's right. This is sort of like the old days of the 1990s, where we had these two big hub carriers that are just watching each other somewhat nervously to make sure that they're not left out. So this really began with United using something called a fly it or lose it clause, that they are, in a sense, entitled to about six more gates because of underutilization of gates by some other carriers, including American. So they feel that six more gates should go to them and have some good vibes that's going to happen. But American is certainly pushing back and has some pretty effective arguments why this may not be a fair shake.
Now, the United hub is Terminal 1. The American hub is Terminal 3. And it took a very long time for United to get to this point, because they were in bankruptcy in the wake of, in 2002. And then there was the merger with Continental, which took a very long time to fully execute. So they're in growth mode. And they have this proposal where they would get about 42% of the gate space at O'Hare, and American with about 30. And what's American saying to this idea?
That's really a good recent development, since both of the airlines are quite committed to O'Hare, and there are some doubts about that. Recently, a year or so ago, when it looked like American may not be planning to rebound from the pandemic and emphasize O'Hare. But now they're coming out of the gates, no pun intended, saying, no, we're growing too. And one of their arguments is that some of the gates that were part of this lose it or use it cause weren't ready until later than suggested. So the clock is still open whether they're underutilizing gates. So they're saying this isn't fair. But United has had a pretty effective announcement that they're ready to grow at O'Hare and they need more room and they're poised to add some service.
And then very quickly, are there other carriers that have grown in recent years that want to expand their footprint? Because my memory of flying Delta out of there was that you either had to go to Salt Lake City or Atlanta to use the rest of their system. What are their plans for Chicago?
Yeah, what's really helped here is we have those new gates at Terminal 5, and Southwest and American are both out there. So Delta picked up its stakes and moved out to Terminal 5. And that kind of prepares us for the big Terminal 2 revamp, which is going to come, within a few years. So Delta is down a couple gates. Southwest actually cut back a little bit. So that's cleared the way for United American both to, potentially grow. But United has been most aggressive here and is ready, I think, this summer to add quite a few flights. And we'll see how this plays out.
Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour.